Welcome to Intersection Live, the tax and accounting profession's premier podcast source, provided by the CPA Technology Advisor and ADP Small Business Services, supporting the accountant community. This is Tech to Go, a monthly fast-paced roundtable discussion with executive editor Darren Root and regular columnists of the CPA Technology Advisor. These thought leaders tackle current technology issues impacting the tax and accounting profession.
Hi, this is Darren Root, and you are listening to episode 27 of Tech to Go. First, I would like to thank our corporate sponsor, ADP, for today's podcast. Today we're going to be talking about some new cell phone technology and some tri-band phones, as well as talk about Google apps and iPhone apps. So it should be an exciting show. I have our regular guests actually co-host with us today. First of all, I have Randy Johnston. Randy is a partner with K2 Enterprises. Randy, welcome.
Good day, and welcome you and all listeners.
Great. And also we have Renee Lassert. Renee is the CEO of Bill.com. Welcome, Renee.
Welcome and good morning.
Thanks. As well as Dave McClure. Dave's the is the president of the U.S. Internet Industry Association. Welcome, Dave.
Thank you. Nice to be here again.
Well, good. So, Dave, I'm actually going to kind of throw this first one out to you. Tell us about this new cell phone technology that you and I kind of talked about the other day.
It's really interesting because this has come up so rapidly and almost out of nowhere. Many people haven't even heard of it and are not even aware it's happening in the background. It's basically the next generation of the Universal Mobile Telecommunications System, or the GSM standard that is used for most of the world's cell phones, and it's called long-term evolution. The thing is that Verizon is buying into a move to LTE. AT&T is committed to it. Most of the world's providers have already committed to this, and it's a fourth-generation cell phone technology. Now, what's this mean to everybody? First of all, it means that sometime in the next 2 years, you're going to be swapping out your cell phone for a newer, more advanced model, and this one will have data capabilities far, far, far beyond anything we've ever seen. 100 megabits per second download, 50 megabits per second upload, the ability to handle 200 simultaneous data downloaders out of a single cell. So what we're really talking about here is a quantum leap forward in being able to get broadband over your cell phone, as well as substantially enhanced cell phone voice capabilities. It's flat out going to revolutionize the broadband industry.
Is this going to be an international standard?
Yes, it is. That's the other important thing. We used to have sort of AT&T had global phones, and Verizon in the past couple of years has cut some deals, and they've worked with quad-band phones to give you roaming capabilities overseas. We're talking about a single phone that can be used worldwide in certainly any of the first world countries. I'm not sure about the third world.
So, Dave, on the LTE with the GSM Association endorsement, Verizon, AT&T, and Ericsson playing and so forth, what do you know about the status of WiMAX as becoming a part of the LTE standard? Any update there?
No real update, and that's a real quandary because, as you know, Randy, Sprint has tied its future to WiMAX, and Sprint has a substantial presence, especially in a lot of rural areas. Now, the CEO of Sprint says he's not going to turn his back on LTE, but they've really hitched their star to WiMAX, so it's going to be very interesting to see. I think if Sprint abandons WiMAX in the U.S., it's a dead technology here. If they don't, they risk being left in the dirt.
Yeah, exactly. And with the, you know, 3 billion plus so far that's been spent by Sprint and Google and Intel, and of course with Zoom being up in Baltimore and 300 plus operators worldwide, that it really is quite confusing, because I agree with the vision that you're laying out of LTE. It is a very important long-term standard, and it really will represent our arrival at the fourth generation phones.
Yeah, I'm excited about it because, as you know, I live in a very rural area here in the Blue Ridge Mountains, and I was meeting with the county planning manager just yesterday to talk about all of this. For the first time, we have the capability to get broadband to every Middlesex village and town, if you will, and do it in a way that is a lot less expensive because you don't have to dig trenches. You don't have to put in extremely high capabilities. You don't have to stream wire. It's there on your cell phone tower. And virtually anywhere you can get a cell signal, now you'll be able to get broadband. That's pretty amazing.
I know this goes back to our last episode, but you know, we were talking about the things that are in the stimulus package. Is there anything in that package, Dave, that helps build out more of this infrastructure?
Well, we haven't really seen it yet, because we don't know how that money is going to be spent. We know some of it is going to go towards cellular capabilities, but they haven't really divvied it up, and I'm not sure that they're looking far enough down the road, though, frankly, the companies are talking about having this deployed starting in 2010, so I don't know how far down the road it has to be. I don't know that it's going to be as much stimulus money because there are just too many strings tied to all the stimulus money. I think the companies are going to prefer to build their own network.
So tell us what this means to the phones, my BlackBerry Bold that I'm carrying around.
Bye-bye. Means you're going to trade it up. It means you're going to give it up for a 4G phone because the BlackBerry, as you know, is a 3G phone. It's pretty data capable. I know my Storm is. It's right now we've got medium level broadband available on your cell phone right now. We're talking about not carrying it to the next generation. Remember, broadband on average is 5 megabits per second. Field trials on LTE in the lab, it hits 100 megabits download, sure, but even in field trials, they're getting 30 to 50 consistently, and that's talking a sixfold increase over anything we've got deployed easily today, except maybe fiber optic.
I have a question. This is just more of a casual user, not casual, but just a user, not somebody who really understands the technology that well. Why is it that the BlackBerry or any AT&T phone causes interference with any speaker device, and will that go away? Because that's a real annoyance. You know what I'm talking about? I mean, if you're
that's a great question.
Radio,
I have to set my BlackBerry away from my speakers on my
phone,
computer, or you're going to hear a static.
Yeah.
Oh, really?
Do you know Randy or Dave? Yeah. Do you guys know what that is? I mean, I assume it's the radio.
Yeah, in fact, I know exactly
sort.
What you're talking about. And another odd twist, if you guys have never had it happen to you, is a cell phone laying next to an electric razor will actually make the electric razor take off. And so if you ever have one of those odd ghosty things happening, it could be that. And in fact, the client I was with yesterday in Annapolis, Maryland, had speaker phones that they'd purchased from Polycom that specifically had the noise suppressant for the cell phone interference. And as you probably recall, all cell phones basically talk to the towers on a fairly regular basis. So actually what's happening is the transmitter in the cell phone, every so often, I don't remember the period, every minute or so, basically talks to the tower and says, "Here I am." And so that interference is really just the transmitter, electromagnetic interference, which, of course, causes that static-sounding experience.
It only happens with AT&T phones. I mean, my wife has Verizon. I used to have Sprint. Never had a problem. The day I switched to the BlackBerry at AT&T, started getting all this interference. And everybody I know, at least in the Bay Area, gets it. So
yeah.
If we're going to the 4G standard, is it still going to be there? It would be nice if they fix that.
Yeah, it's a frequency thing, and I don't believe it will be there because the frequencies that we're talking about are different.
I would tend to agree with that. You know, I did a quick lookup while you guys were chatting to see what I could find on this problem, and it says basically it's a problem with the GSM frequencies, and it's because the wires leading to your speakers in your computer are not shielded the way like a standard, the way your really high-class speakers in your stereo system are shielded. They're not in a computer, and so they're picking up the transmissions from your cell phone. And it says basically, you know, you can throw away your GSM phone or put cotton in your ears, but that's about the only way to do it unless you're going to shield those cables. But you're right. 4G is going to be different because it's on a different frequency.
Great. Well, Dave, I think this is great information. I guess, you know, for our listeners out there, if you're thinking about upgrading phones in the next 6 to 12 months, it may be something that you want to keep in mind. Because
and
if this isn't going to be available, then you ought to maybe be holding off.
Well, you know, a little delay here isn't bad. And, of course, even for the more casual must-go-get-a-phone-now group, with the new rumors of the Apple iPhone next generation or the third version of that phone arriving in June, delaying right now isn't a bad strategy on lots of fronts.
All right, guys. Randy, we said we want to talk a little bit about Google Apps. Did you have something else, Dave, to add to that?
Yeah, I just want to point out one other thing. As you know, I have been a harsh critic of Wi-Fi wireless because it's basically not secure. And any accountant who uses a Wi-Fi connection for business ought to be tarred and feathered at the very least for the insecurity involved. GSM, fourth generation, this whole LTE thing promises that among the mobile warriors in the accounting groups, you're going to be able to connect to your home computer from your laptop in the field in a secure way that you've never been able to before, except with a direct wired connection. So that I think that's going to make it very much of interest to accounting firms.
Well, just to add to that, that's a component I didn't even think about. So I have broadband built into my laptop. So this is going to have a direct impact on that, right?
Yeah, I would not be at all surprised to see LTE communication chips built into laptops by the time we get into 2010.
Oh, fantastic. Good deal. All right, Randy.
And
go ahead.
Dave,
sorry.
And Dave, your conclusion on that is actually correct, because in other laptop engineering trends that I've read about, they indeed intend to put in LTE shortly. The holdup there a little bit will be Intel's commitment on WiMAX, but their intent is to actually do system board integration on the chipset of LTE, the way I read it.
I just hope at some point I see these built into my MacBook Pro that I carry. Right now I keep sticking a card in the end of it. Any word on, do you know anything about that, Randy, at all?
Don't know anything about that on the Mac side of the world. You know, so for now, unfortunately, you're probably dealing with the USB stick to make that connection.
You know, Renee, I said I was out in your neighborhood last week in San Jose, and the interesting thing, when I was flying out of the airport, I was surprised at how many MacBooks were on people's laps in the airport.
Yeah, I'm sure it helps that we have an Apple store like every 5 miles here.
I'm sure it does.
But it is true. I mean, you know, the last company I started, PayCycle, you know, we probably have, you know, 160 people. There's not one app in that shop. And, you know, at Bill.com, you know, half the machines are Apple these days. So,
yeah. You know, I like mine, that's for sure. Randy,
well,
let's talk a little bit about Google Apps. Kind of lay the groundwork there for us.
Well, here's kind of where this is heading, and Microsoft is going to have a response to this, so it's not like we're throwing out Microsoft here, but Google has had an initiative for some time where they've either been writing or purchasing applications. In the prior lives, they had things like their Writely product and so forth, but the key with the new Google Apps is Google has a collection of applications that can either do word processing, so Google Docs, or can actually do spreadsheets, and the spreadsheets are Office 2003 compatible, including things like pivot table features, including things like graphics, which can then be rolled up into dashboards. They also have the equivalent of a PowerPoint presentation piece, but everything in the applications is run through a browser and stored in the Google data warehouses, wherever those are at, the Google data centers. But the fundamental features that I believe most people use in word processing, spreadsheets, or the equivalent of presentation software is built into this product. The key competitive advantage on the product right now, in my opinion, is the ability to have multiple users simultaneously inside the spreadsheets, Word documents, or presentations. So I am routinely, for things related to my family, doing things entirely inside Google Docs, and all of us have access to it that way. So a very simple example here is we are planning a European trip, and we are actually building all of the information for that trip in a shared sheet that everybody has access to in the family. And so if you start thinking about the model here, it is actually quite interesting how usable, how fast, and how capable the products are. Further, wherever you can get a web browser, you can run the application. So I think I am seeing a trend, and I really got a wake-up call in the latter part of 2008, where I was told by more than a few, in fact, I would say at this point it was about 14 that I've heard from so far, CPA firms who have converted their entire firm from Microsoft Office to Google Docs. They no longer use Microsoft Office.
So are they taking their spreadsheets and moving them out there, or are they building them out there?
They are building them out there, but they have the ability to convert them out there. So you can actually, in the Google Sheets product, do an export or an import. So you can take existing models and read them natively in. In fact, to date, for Excel spreadsheets, PowerPoint presentations, and Word docs, everything that I've done has converted across gorgeously.
Renee, do you guys have
one of the things?
Are you guys using that at all?
Yeah, well, you know, I played with it probably about a year ago, and it didn't have a lot of the features that Randy just mentioned. So, you know, it sounds like it's time for me to go back and play with it. And specifically for me, it didn't have the pivot tables and didn't have the shared access when I last played with it. So, is there anything, Randy, that you see, you know, financial form? Or is there any advanced feature of Excel that you see not in Google spreadsheets these days?
There are some, but so few that it's almost it would be incorrect to say everything is covered. But there's so few things that aren't covered that I'm going to say for most of us, the functions that we need are there. Beyond that, there are functions inside Google Sheets, for example, that don't exist inside Microsoft Excel Sheets. Two specifically I want to cite are Google Finance. So if you'd like to look up a stock price, although that might be a little painful for you right now, you can actually, in a 15 to 20 minute delay formula, have those prices brought back. It'll do price and EPS and close and so forth. So it's very interesting formula, if you will, so financial formula. There's also a Google lookup feature where you can specify lookup terms, much like you would do in a Google search, and it will look up those characteristics and then provide you with the supporting documentation link. So, you know, I, for example, do a lot of research around accounting firms, accounting software firms, paperless firms, and so forth. So, you know, just in preparation for our time on the phone today, I did a Google lookup of, and it's very simple, Google lookup, and in quotes, Intuit, and in quotes, employees, and it basically produces the source of the number of employees. I did the same thing for Sage and IBM. And so what it's really doing is using Google research facilities or Google search facilities to give you a documented reference number. And I think, Renee, your attitude on this is exactly correct. Our teams had experimented with these products when they were new. They were just so incapable, it didn't make a lot of sense to use them. At this point, you know, most of the things that I'm doing inside a spreadsheet or a PowerPoint presentation or a word processing document, I can do in a Google app, and I can do it from anywhere that I can get a web browser. So I'm starting to scratch my head a little bit and say, well, tell me why I wouldn't do it this way. One other key feature that was added to the product over the last, 6 months or so, is a feature called Google Gears. Because as all of us well know, on a SaaS application, one of the risks is what happens when I don't have an internet connection or I have the provider down condition. And with Google Gears, it actually replicates the files locally so you can process locally. And when you reattach, your documents, spreadsheets, and so forth are transferred back to the hosting facility. And we think we're going to see more of that with other capabilities like the Adobe Flex or some of the other technologies that have been introduced by different publishers.
Well, you know what, Randy, you turned me on to Google Calendars, a few weeks ago. And that's, I've really been amazed at how easy that was to set up and to share. And, it's really been superior to anything else that I had used in that space.
Yes, and isn't it interesting that Google Calendars actually has more scheduling capability than Microsoft Outlook plus Exchange? Because, you know, I have recurring events on my calendar and the invitations for people to the inside and outside. And, as we speak now, I actually have a Google Sync running because there is a small utility from Google that allows a two-way update from Google Calendars back into Outlook and over on into Exchange. So, in effect, as a user, we can make an entry on our iPhone, let's say, and it will roll back to Google Calendar, which will roll all the way back to Exchange.
You know, maybe I'm doing something wrong, but something I've seen happening to me there is when somebody sends me an iCal,
mm-hmm.
let's say you send me an invitation, and I accept it, it shows up in Outlook, but for some reason it's not appearing in my Google Calendar.
Yeah.
Have you experienced that at all?
You know, I have not had it at all. In fact, I would go so far as to say I had tried the sync in the past, and there had been some issues, but the current version that's out there right now has just been superb at working correctly. So,
okay.
You know, it could be just a setup issue. You probably have done it, but just make sure you've got the two-way piece turned on, because the sync tool is set up to do a one-way from Google Calendar to Outlook, or a one-way from Outlook to Google Calendar. So you may just have the one-way piece turned on. I don't know. But
yeah, I have a two-way. It's actually syncing right now as I look at it. But I must have something else set up wrong there.
Uh-huh. There's not a lot of options, though, as you know, Darren. So,
yeah.
But at this point, I have not seen anything that hasn't worked just flawlessly for me doing it that approach. So it's been a very interesting learning period to go through this, because I've read articles where, like writers from the Wall Street Journal have tried to live entirely inside these applications. And I still think it's early, and they might be a little technical for the casual user. But the more I use it, the more I realize I'm doing everything that I need to do right inside the product. And, you know, trying to disconnect now from the Microsoft world and just not use anything else, I think is possible.
How do you feel about the security of the docs up there? I mean, I don't know. I'm sure it's a secure connection, but how do you think about that when you put stuff up there?
Well, you know, that's actually one reason, Renee, we haven't recommended it broadly, because the Google license agreement very specifically says that if it's on Google sites, that they have the authority and permissions to access it. And from that perspective, clearly you'd say, can't put client data up there because Google says in their license agreement that they'll access it, which to our knowledge they have not. Now, Google has a corporate licensing strategy where they actually will provide you with, you know, domain administration and complete private emails and allow you to use your URL to run their Gmail systems and calendars and so forth. So it really winds up looking much more corporate-like, which is exactly the strategy that the city of Washington, D.C. took. So they now have, last I knew, 37,000 users completely on Google Docs, Sheets, Presentations, and Calendar, and no longer license Microsoft Office nor allow is probably too strong, but they no longer want people using Microsoft Office products. I think for our listeners, though, the caution is the license agreement says, therefore, you do have to be cautious, which is exactly why I'm using it for family documents. Those aren't quite so confidential and have not been recommending it for client documents at this point. But there's no indicator that Google has made any of that information public.
You made a statement as you're introducing this, that it works with Office 2003. Do you know what the holdup is on 2007?
I do not know, and in fact, I'm actually surprised that Google has not made the conversion tool available. The new Microsoft Office formats are actually easier to convert with more XML in them, and the Google Docs themselves are XML documents, so I'm actually a little confused as to why it has taken so long for them to get that done.
I definitely think that if our audience has not looked at Google Apps, it's definitely worth taking a look at.
I would recommend it very highly, and as a family communication tool, you know, multiple shared calendars, and even things like, and again, I'll do one more family application. We actually have our entire video and music libraries in shared sheets. So any of my mother, my mother-in-law and father-in-law, sisters and so forth, our entire family has access to our sheets of DVD, Blu-ray and so forth. And so it really winds up being kind of a family shopping list capability. Oh yeah, Randy doesn't have one of those. Or in reverse, a lending library deal. Oh yeah, I see that Randy has, and you know, they can send a message and say, hey, I want to borrow this the next time I'm in town.
Very good. Renee, as promised.
Go ahead, Renee. I think about why the lack of applications from Microsoft in this space and what it means for them long term, because it does sound like in the last year Google has done a lot. Time for me to look at it again, and it makes me wonder 3 years from now what it'll be. And you know, Microsoft doesn't really have anything out there like this. That's probably a whole other podcast, huh?
It is almost another podcast, but we do know that Microsoft has been talking publicly about their Office web applications, which are going to provide some of this same type of capability and allow you to work hosted, offline, and through a browser, but fundamentally still sync back into a copy of Office somewhere along the way.
Randy, I don't want to gloss over this business about the license, though, because I'm paranoid. Okay, I'll admit it right here. I'm paranoid about all this stuff, and I have seen too many examples of websites that would never, ever, ever, ever make bad use of your personal data right up until the moment they run into financial trouble, and then they'll sell it to the highest bidder. And I'm very concerned about Google. Not that I believe they're an evil company, because I don't, but I get very concerned that they are taking ownership of the personal data of everything that passes them. If you use their Chrome browser, they're tracking you everywhere. If you go to their site, if you do a search, if you use their docs, if you use their email, they are categorizing and taking ownership of everything you own. And to me, if you're in a business of public trust like accounting, you have no business using an application like that for business. That's just my personal feeling. you want to use it personally, check your horoscope, whatever, log with your friends, go on to MySpace. That's a wonderful thing in your personal life. In your professional life, if you can't retain ownership of your client records, that's scary. And that's my two cents worth.
I appreciate the 2 cents, because the thing that is bothering me even further is Microsoft heading down the same path, whether that's through the Live Mesh product or the Office Live pieces, which have been integrated into the last versions of Office 2003, and the Groove public replication and so forth. There, unfortunately, is more and more evidence of the Microsoft licensing evolving the same way, and the data winding up partially reposited in Microsoft servers. So I think you are absolutely correct, Dave, on this licensing and risk, and I frankly see the same risk coming at us from a Microsoft perspective.
I'll tell you, I've worked with marketers over the years, and the marketers have this bizarre belief that people just love advertising, and that the only thing wrong with advertising, the only reason that people go to such extreme lengths to bypass their advertising is, well, they just haven't targeted it well enough, you see. And if we could just, if we could get into your head and learn everything you like to buy and just target you with those ads, you'd love them and you'd accept them. I even had a marketer tell me that people actually prefer ads to the content because they're more interesting and more visual. And I looked at him and said, he's got to get his medications checked, because people don't, and they're not. And I know they only want to do this so that they can do a better job of sending more and more and more ads. I don't like any bit of it.
Well, Dave, I think you're a great voice of reason, because I mean, I'm one who loves new technology and needs to make sure that I think about the security issues and the pros and cons before I rush into it. So I think it's well said.
It's very well said, and you know, being out here in the Valley and meeting with VCs all the time, the question I get asked most often is, what's your free model? What's your freemium model? Because that's what everybody assumes advertising because of Google success is the way to go. And my response is not quite as pointed, because I still try to get money from these guys, as Dave's was, but I say, that's not the way I'm going to do it. This is customer data. You can't sell this stuff. So it's an interesting point.
Yeah, I'll just point out that nearly every product that has relied solely on advertising to support itself, solely on advertising, has been unsuccessful. I mean, even television these days, is shifting to a cable model where there's subscription up front. So I'd be very cautious, too, I'm cautious of two kinds of online sites or online services. One, I'm very cautious of anybody who doesn't seem to have a business plan, and I'm very cautious of one whose business plan is based on advertising, because so far, neither one has worked very well.
Well, guys, let's take a moment and pivot. Renee, as promised, I'd like to talk just a little bit about iPhone apps. I know that my wife and kids all have iPhones. I actually carry a BlackBerry Bold. So tell us a little bit of it. Are you carrying an iPhone, Renee?
I'm not, but my wife does, and I've been playing with it, and a couple of people at the office have. And so I am, you know, the BlackBerry for somebody who is an email junkie is just by far the best application. But you know, I'm hoping with the new phone coming out in the spring summer time frame that won't be the case. They will fix some of the search capabilities and some of the other things that the BlackBerry has that the iPhone doesn't.
Well, tell me what you know, and everybody else can chime in on these iPhone apps.
Well, you know, the first thing I would say that's been just kind of a high level for the users, what makes the iPhone different is that they open up an API, and people are designing specifically that API, and that API is designed specifically for the iPhone. It takes advantage of the attributes that make an iPhone a special product. You know, the iPhone, I think, has north of 100 million customers in less than 4 years. I mean, not many applications, not many devices can actually accomplish that. And that's hardware. You know, Facebook had 100 million users in 4 years, but guess what? It was all free. But, you know, 100 million people paying $300 for a phone, it's pretty impressive.
Yep.
And some of the attributes about the iPhone that make it unique is it's a very visual product. And it just kind of simplifies, you know, I think one of the things that I think that's happening, and this is a broader topic as well, that's happening with technology today, is that we're taking, you know, we're all technical, and in some ways you would say geeks, right? We all kind of love gadgets like that. Most people don't, right? Most people just want to have something that improves their life, and they don't want to have to learn or do anything to figure it out. And the iPhone is one of those applications that you just get it and it starts working. And so with the API they developed, all the apps that end up being an iPhone app, there's no user manual. They just kind of do, and it's very interesting. It's you know, I've actually said to the engineers at Bill.com, you know, why don't we start thinking about, if this were an iPhone app, how would that simplify, force us to simplify what we're presenting to the customer? Because it's a very, very different metaphor for building applications. One, it's visual. Two, it's you know, kind of an always-on thing. And three, you know, like I kind of just mentioned, there's no learning required. The other thing that the iPhone does that's built in, which I think is very powerful, is that it does have the Wi-Fi built in. So, like for my wife, when she's home, she's connected to her Wi-Fi network. When she's at her office, she's connected to the Wi-Fi network. And so for her, oftentimes if she's in a meeting at the office, it's just easier to use the iPhone to go check what she needs to check than going back to her desk. And I think that's powerful because the Wi-Fi is fast, right? The problem with, we were just talking at the beginning of the conversation about how the 4G phones are going to be faster, but they're still pretty slow. I mean, I do use the browser a fair bit on the BlackBerry, and it is slow, and it's not, you know, it's not what you expect from the web these days. And, you know, the other thing about, you know, other smartphones, the apps that get developed for them are kind of in a standard template for all smartphones. They don't take advantage of any one of them, and it ends up being a scroll nightmare. I mean, I don't know if you guys have used that, but if I go to browse the New York Times or the Wall Street Journal or, you know, any of the publications I like to read, you know, on my BlackBerry, I'm scrolling forever to actually see what I want. And, you know, if that were done on the iPhone, it would be visual and you wouldn't do that. So,
Renee, the problem isn't that you have to scroll forever. Let's be honest here. The problem is you never have a good set of reading glasses nearby so you can read in small print.
My kids log into this app store, and they've downloaded, because I get the bills, all this stuff.
That's the interesting thing, right? The App Store has thousands of apps up there right now. And those games that they're downloading, hopefully you're only getting hit with 99 cents every time. but hopefully they're nothing more than that. But I think the thing that will happen is, I mean, the first set of apps to get built have been games, you know, whether it's bowling or, you know, cards or throwing the dice or, you know, whatever, all these funny things you can do because it's got the motion detector in there. That's the first thing that's getting built because it's visual and it's cool. But I foresee, you know, business applications getting built into the iPhone that will be very, very helpful for businesses. You know, I think about our application, and let's say I'm a construction company, I'm out traveling around, or I'm a doctor, and between meetings, if I could see a bill and just click on pay between doctor appointments, that'd be great. If I had 5 minutes, I just wanted to go do that and didn't have to log in, that would be very neat. And I think that's the type of thing that's coming. I can tell you a little bit what, you know, when I go up there and I look for business apps, there's not a lot up there. There's stuff that I would call more personal productivity, kind of your to-dos, your expense tracking, mileage counters, things like that. There are apps such as QuickBooks Online and FreshBooks, which have put some business apps up there. But I haven't seen a lot of adoption of those yet. And they haven't really customized the same way that I think will happen over the next year.
Randy, do you have any experience with any of this?
Yeah, I actually do. And we ordered an extra iTouch for some of the same types of reasons over the past weekend. And, of course, the number of applications is growing dramatically. The model for delivery of the applications from the apps store is actually starting to drive the thinking of other people from the web and so forth. And the user interface just in general is elegant, like most Apple engineering is. And, as Dr. Bob and I actually a week ago today were digging through some of these things in terms of our recommended applications and so forth, there are so many well-thought-out applications that have gone beyond cool to exceptionally practical on the product. I think it just is a self-feeding mechanism. So, you know, one of the nicest pieces that we pointed out in our Twitter and other channels over the past week, of course, is the new Kindle reader for the iPhone. And, you know, the Kindle electronic book, and I've had both Kindle 1 and now Kindle 2, I really like the e-books because they're so easy to read and much more convenient than reading a paper book. I can read faster. I have less eye strain. Well, it turns out that the Kindle reader on the iPhone is actually quite readable, and it's smart enough to hold your exact place in the book on the iPhone or on the Kindle. So if you read a few pages on your iPhone and then you switch back over to your Kindle and read a few more pages there, it actually updates both devices, so it maintains your spot in both worlds.
And
for anybody using the Kindle, I would absolutely put the Kindle Reader app on your iPhone or your iTouch, and you'll be amazed at how much more you'll actually just do a little quick read while waiting on something.
Well, I know I definitely have iPhone envy. You know, I like my BlackBerry. I can be very efficient with my calendar and my email. But every time my kids or my wife have theirs around, they're doing so many more things that are fun. Mine's really a business tool, and I may make the swap one of these days. The other thing I was going to tell you, Randy, I was on your website last night, and I have a whole new appreciation for Dr. Bob. I realized that he's an Indiana University graduate at about the same time I was. So you might pass that along to him. I'm sure we crossed in the halls maybe.
I will do that because he's quite pleased to have been associated with not only that university but the other ones that he attended as well.
Yes, I imagine so. Well, guys, we're running out of time today. Anybody have closing thoughts today?
Yeah, this is Dave, and just wanted to note that for those who haven't made the switch to an iPhone and can't give up their BlackBerry but still want that touch, take a look at Storm. it's not a bad little phone. I'm carrying one and like it a whole lot. And Indiana, isn't that one of those dreary Midwestern states that starts with a vowel?
We used to have a basketball team here that made it more palatable.
Now, I should explain, I'm a Hawkeye from Iowa, class of 73, so I have the right to say that.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Well, and just as Dave had pointed out, you know, another really good alternative phone in this is the Android phone, only available on T-Mobile, and that's really kind of my closing thought here. With iPhone only being on the AT&T network, there are those of the listeners here who won't have very good AT&T network coverage, me being one of them. So, you know, so many of these products are still tied to their single publisher that could be a little bit of a problem for you. But you do have good alternatives. Dave's dead spot on that Storm. It's a very nice product. So you've got three or four real solid competitors with good user interfaces along that line. Just like in a few months, we'll also have the Palm Pre with its new generation interface for the Sprint users.
Well, and I think those are all great points. The thing that's interesting to me is just the iPhone apps and how that's taken off as a software developer. And it's a pretty big wave. So, and the other companies need to figure out a way to get the same type of thing going because it's pretty powerful.
Yeah, it is amazingly powerful. In fact, I have been following the app developers, and just like you can write in Mono and .NET and cross the Linux and Windows platforms, I've been watching the app developers who can write a single application and run it on the iPhone through the iPhone Store and run it on the Google Android. And that's been a pretty interesting evolution there as well.
Well, good, guys. We're out of time today. Thank you so much for your time. And I want to thank ADP again for being our corporate sponsor. So until next month, this is it for Tech2Go.
The CPA Technology Advisors Intersection Live podcast series is brought to you by ADP Small Business Services, supporting the accountant community. For more information about the CPA Technology Advisor's other podcast programs, webcasts, and our e-newsletter, visit cpatechnologyadvisor.com. To ask questions or leave comments about our podcasts, call 800-456-0864, extension 2106. Or tune in to future episodes where you're able to ask questions live via talkshoe.com.